Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy. You know, we all have family picture frames. Frames that reflect the people who bring us the most joy, but also the people who can bring us the most frustration.
Yet, no matter what, the people in those frames have your back, and you have theirs. Regardless of who's in your frame, you're in it together. They are your legacy.
Welcome to the In This Together podcast, where we go behind the scenes to share stories from our own crooked picture frame.
And interview guests to discover how their stories can give us insight on becoming families who live, love, and lead well.
Because you're not alone. We're all in this together. Today's podcast is brought to you by 22-6 Parenting, an online community designed to help you disciple your kids to live, love, and lead well. Check it out at 226parenting.com.
We are talking today about a fun topic that we've been talking quite a bit about this summer as we get ready to send our kids back to school. We were kind of discovering something this summer, and the topic, as you might have seen, is teaching our kids to be human. Mm-hmm. And
which is kind of laughable considering the fact that they obviously quite clearly are human, already.
But this is a great conversation for us because, in particular for me, it's a conversation about humanity mm-hmm. and being human mm-hmm. in the flesh and who God created us to be in His image. But then also understanding that in light of eternity. And I don't want to like over-spiritualize it, but it's the connection between who we are, who we're becoming as individuals, and then who we're raising our kids to be and helping them live in light of eternity as humans.
Exactly. And I think this conversation came about really during the summer with screens and kids wanting to be on their screens for the summer. And actually a conversation we had last season in the podcast with Gabe and Rebecca Lyons, and he made the comment, it's almost like we need to reteach our kids how to be human because we're living in a digital age. And so kids are just being raised in a culture where screens are the norm and coding and math and computer sciences are, you know, sort of the wave of the future. And we understand that, but we're losing the concrete and the tangible and the trades and the crafts and really a lot of the things that have made us human. And so we started to have this conversation on how can we teach our kids to be human, those deep human needs, I think, that we all have, and for us as well. How do we get back there? How do we get off the technology wave and remember what it's like to be human at our deepest level? And so part of that was we went camping and we took our kids camping this summer in our little tent. Well, it's not little. It's a good size tent, but like no fancy camper, like with water or electric or anything or air conditioning. That is the struggle. It gets pretty hot in there, but there was something we came back from that. We went 5 days, 4 nights, and it was awesome. It really was. There was some rough patches.
There was some complaining at times.
There was. I mean, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
And it was mostly probably from me.
Yeah.
But
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, that was good. But really, we loved it. And we came back and I just kept saying,
I'm grateful you're saying that now.
That I loved it?
Yeah. Well, because there were times where I'm like,
oh, there
you
was
want to do this
times
again.
I literally said, we're never doing this again. Yeah. But then I came back and I'm like, that was so great. We're totally doing this again. But there was something that is just so human about sleeping in the ground 4 inches from the dirt and waking up outside and eating outside and spending all day outside and bug bites and standing in line to wait for a shower. I mean, it's just so grounding, I think.
And to this conversation, as we get ready to send our kids back to school, you know, I think of it in relation to our kids becoming human as it relates to how they relate to other people as well, how they interact with their peers, how they interact with their teachers, showing respect to their teachers and authority and that kind of thing. And so that's what
and really knowing how to do face-to-face relationships.
Yeah.
Human to human.
And I say this quite often, you know, I want my kids to be able to show up to a barista and order coffee when they're older, not staring at their screen, but actually interacting with the barista, mm-hmm. interacting with the person and asking them about their day. These are souls. When we talk about becoming human, teaching our kids to be human, and we talk about the eternal part of this, we're interacting with souls every single day, mm-hmm. or we're not interacting with souls. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, it comes down to that as a choice. And so we're going to talk about five things today, five ways that we can teach our kids to be human, and even for us as parents, to get back to ourselves being human. Mm-hmm. And so the first one is something you were already talking about.
Go outside.
Get outside.
Yeah. There is something about being outside in God's creation. And this isn't like anything fancy or drastic even required. Sometimes it literally just takes the going outside and finding stuff outside that you love to do.
There was one research study in particular that looked at the Danish way of parenting and how to raise the world's happiest kids. Because in Denmark is where childhood kids are the happiest. And one of the key factors for them is that they're outside. Their mm-hmm. kids are outside. And we get parents asking us, you know, well, but we live in America. It's much different. You know, how much leeway do we give our kids? You know, and I talk about this in Safe House, you know, quite a bit, that balance between exploration, the ability for our kids to explore the world around them. If you picture a house and they step out into the world, you want them to explore the world around them. It is linked, that exploration is linked in research to self-confidence and self-competence later in life, self-esteem, the ability to feel worthy. But we also have to protect them,
yeah,
lest they run around and that type of thing. And I mean, you can, you know, I use the analogy, you don't want your kids to run out into the street. You need to protect them. There needs to be fence. There needs to be a boundary. But we need to set this protection exploration continuum. It needs to be balanced over time. Right. We have to balance it.
Right. And allow, I think in our society, we veer much more toward the protection side. And so we're overprotecting kids. Like that wall of protection is just much higher than, say, the wall of exploration. And so I think that half of that is just allowing them to adventure.
Yeah. Allowing them to explore around them age appropriately. And, you know, for instance, you know, our kids go outside. We have a fence in our backyard, so they stay within the confines of that fence. But I mean, we're letting them play, you know, we're letting them outside and doing their thing. I think even as it relates to the camping trip, right? I mean, you know, allowing our kids to not get too close to the fire, but allowing them to play around and to see what it's like to build a fire, you know, to show them, to begin showing them those types of things so that they're adventuring and they're seeing things. You know, our son loves to adventure. He loves, and part of this is Christy instilling an adventure in him. There was one particular time where he came into the tent and it was bedtime and I'm like, buddy, you need to come in and get your PJs on. And he's like, no, Dad, Mom told me that I could go on an adventure with her to the bathroom. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, what am I going to say to that?
Well,
so
you can make everything an adventure, especially when you're camping. We have got those little headlamps, you know, the headlights, in which they totally feel like explorers, right? And so we go on an adventure to the bathroom. It's dark. I mean, that's amazing. But I think, and I think back to your point, I wanted to say this too. I think what we have to be careful of and just aware of is that our kids do desire adventure, and that in our culture, we're trying so hard to make things safe and easy for them that I think we're limiting. We're not giving them enough rein. Like, we're not giving them enough rope to go. And I remember last season when Bob and Maria Goff were on, mm-hmm. and Maria started talking about when her four kids came inside and said, Mom, we're going to run away. Like, okay. And she wanted to be like, no, you cannot run away. But she's like, okay, I'll help you pack your bags. Because I realized there was something in them that was like, they needed that. They needed to do this adventure thing together. And so, I mean, it just reminds me of that we need to allow that to cultivate in our kids.
Adventure. Yeah. Number two is, and it goes along the same lines as we talk about teaching our kids to be human, is working with their hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about, this is what's fascinating to me. And if you're a regular listener on the podcast, you've heard me probably say this before. The executive chief technology officer of eBay, as well as executives at Google, Yahoo, Apple, and HP, they live in Silicon Valley and send their kids to a 9-classroom school where technology is completely omitted. And it's called Waldorf schooling.
Incredible.
And then you, but Waldorf schooling is basically, it's going back to the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. It's hands-on, it's outdoor activities, it's competition, and it's hands-on learning. I think the reason that they're protecting their kids from technology is because of creativity and imagination. Mm-hmm. Research shows that boredom leads to creativity. At least 15 minutes of boredom leads to creative thinking. Well, if we're putting our kids in front of screens or they're not getting bored enough to be creative, they're not going to be the leaders in the next generation. We want to raise kids who are leaders in the next generation. We want them to be creative and imaginative. And so getting them to even work with their hands, learn whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. whether it's building blocks, whether it's going fishing, whether it's, helping, our son Landon loves, anytime I'm fixing something, he brings his little tool set alongside mm-hmm. and his ladder, and he's up beside me and he's doing the same thing. He wants to, kids desire to work with their hands.
Yeah. And I think what we've done is we've handed them things like screens and entertainment in an attempt to satisfy their, mom, I'm bored. And it's like we need to fill that void. And we've really done them a disservice in the fact that we're almost, lulling them into a creative impotence. And so I was talking about the other day, I met a friend of mine who started this creative arts class for kids and then for parents as well, like for the adults, because I believe it's up to age 5 is when our creativity peaks and then it starts to go down because we're taught how to think in school. We're taught what to think and how to think. And obviously that does great things. We learn great things through formal education, but we start to lose the way we think, our creative thinking. And so that's something that, working with your hands, the trades, getting back to like those real beautiful things that are kind of going away in our culture, pottery and, even just some of the arts that we're just hoping we can start to reinstill in this next generation, that they would really see almost the beauty. And you see that a little bit like with Etsy and the small batch cooking and all this, it's kind of going back to that way of life.
And the beauty about this one is it helps us become students of our kids. We can help our kids find their strengths, yeah. find what their passions are, find what they love. Just the other day, I asked our son Landon, who's getting ready to be 5. And I asked him, I said, he's been playing T-ball in the last couple seasons. And yet, as he's jumping around the house, he's got this guitar. And he's got this little microphone and he's ripping on that guitar and he's singing and he's
it's
making
hilarious.
Up songs, his own words. He's like songwriting and he's like doing his stuff.
And okay, but funny. And the production value, like the stage presence thing, I have no idea. Where has he got that from?
Where he sees it. Yeah, but he sees it somewhere.
I don't know.
But he's like, he's got into that microphone.
It must be his uncle.
And so... the Hunter Brothers.
That's my guess. But otherwise, he hasn't seen anything like that. Anyway, it's certainly not from you or I.
So I asked him the other day, I said, buddy, what would you like to do this fall? If you had a choice, would you rather continue playing T-ball, baseball, or would you want to learn how to play guitar? And he didn't even think twice. I want to play the guitar, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we become students of our kids to really pour into them and, helping them live out of their passions.
Yeah.
And to do it well without instilling our desires. Because my desire is to make it, I'd love for him to play baseball. But if he's going to end up playing the guitar and that's something he loves and he loves music, man, I want to champion that more than anything in the world for that boy.
And I think that's our job as parents is just to, like you said, become students of them, but also encourage them towards these things, with things they can do with their hands, hobbies. And can I say, things that stick with them for life. Like guitar or golf or tennis or, some sort of art thing. Because there's a lot of stuff that I think we train kids in, but it's stuff they can only do for temporary, like in your hotshot years of great athletic ability that really do go by so fast. And then you're a has-been.
You sound like you're speaking from experience.
Yeah.
Number 3 is teaching them to feel. And this is one, we're going to put this in the show notes at the bottom, but we have a brand new feelings chart that for kids that you can look at the photo on, they're really cool characters.
Adorable characters, yes.
And you can look at the photo, and then what you can do is you can also see the feeling word underneath, so that when your kids are feeling things, you can begin to help them understand what they're feeling. And they can look at the face, and they can compare that to what the feeling is, so they can begin to put language to what it is that they're feeling when they're sad, when they're jealous, when they're anxious, when they're happy, when they're joyful. See, when in therapy, a lot of times, especially working with juvenile delinquents and teenagers through the years, one of the biggest, one of the very first things I'd start with is giving them this feelings chart, because they had no idea what their own nobody's ever championed what they feel and has helped them to be allowed to feel
and to identify it and then be able to name it. Right. Because what I was going to mention that when you first said it, because it's for kids. I mean, our feelings chart is specifically designed for kids. And if you look at the design of it, it's adorable. But it's not just for little kids. I mean, this is where we want to start, is when they are young. But there are a lot of teenagers
and parents.
And parents that have just never learned where emotion was probably dismissed or punished in their home. And so they've just never learned to be able to identify what they're feeling and then name it. And explain why that's so important though.
Yeah.
And this I think that's helpful.
And it's important because the brain grows from the right to the left. So meaning the right part of the brain is the here and now experiential part of the brain. It's what we're experiencing. It's what we're feeling. And the left part of the brain is that linguistic language part of the brain. It's putting language to the experience. And so the corpus callosum, which is the middle part of the brain, if you will, I call it the binding of the book. So if you have the right side of the book and the left side of the book, but you don't have the middle to put it together, your story is never going to be fully complete. Mm. When we put language to our experiences, you have a full story. You have a coherent narrative, if you will, of the story of the life that you're living. And so this really, to get a little bit deeper, this gets a little bit deeper when you think about maybe if you're a parent right now listening, and, you know, you didn't have a very good childhood growing up. Maybe your parents weren't there for you. Maybe your parents punished you rather than disciplined you. Maybe you were even abused as a child. There's a lot of times where there can be an incoherent story or an incoherent narrative because we never went back and put words to how we felt we were treated or hurt by those that were supposed to love us the most. Mm-hmm. And so when we put language to those experiences, and this is why taking it up a little bit notch to a little bit less of a heavy topic, it's why grieving is so important. Hmm. It's why getting through our loss is so important. You know, M. Scott Peck wrote in The Road Less Traveled that depression is normal. It's a healthy experience because depression is really the body's experience of losing something that we love dearly or losing something that's familiar to us. Well, in our culture today, we're taught just to get over it. We're taught that, you know, it's all about instant gratification. We'll just suck it up and get over it and move on. But the problem is depression becomes unhealthy when we don't deal with it, when we don't effectively grieve and put language to what it is that we've lost. And there are a lot of things that we lose in this life. You know, it's not just people and it's not just from moving. There's other things that we lose in this life, like the loss of, if you're a stay-at-home mom, And you're not, you know, enjoying working right now and finding purpose in your life, that, you know, and all of a sudden you feel stuck between these four walls and you feel like, yeah, you're doing an amazing thing. And this is thinking, you know, I'm doing an amazing thing. I'm taking care of the kids, but it doesn't feel like I'm doing an amazing thing. Like I don't have purpose. I don't have a passion that I'm moving towards out of. And this is where I think it's becoming a thing, is this idea of a stay-at-home mom depression.
Yeah.
And but putting language to it, being able to verbalize it, being able to say, you know what, I've lost something here, mm-hmm. but being able to learn how to reframe that in a way that helps you grieve it. This is the power of putting language. This is the ability to be human. You know, the Bible says we're allowed to be angry. Be angry, but in your anger do not sin. Mm-hmm. The power of emotion is amazing, the way God designed us to experience a wide range of emotion and to experience the world around us. The problem in our culture, I believe, is that we've been taught to get over emotion, not to feel, to find ways to suppress it, whether it's alcohol, drugs, screens, pornography, work, whatever it is. They're idols. And so we're just taught not to feel.
Yeah.
And therefore not to be human.
Yeah. No, I think it's incredible. We were literally just talking about the stay-at-home mom depression thing last night, actually. And so that's a whole topic in and of itself, I think it's worth addressing. But I think that it's speaking to that exactly, because it's the loss of something, but we don't even know. I think most of the time we're not even aware that we've lost something. We don't, yeah. We've never acknowledged the grief of it, or that we need to grieve it. And we need to not only do that for ourselves, but we need to do that for our kids, for kids that have lost friends, and through moving, through changing classrooms, there's a lot of change that I think goes on in our kids' lives that we don't acknowledge as adults because it seems so small to us. A teddy bear, like a real special thing that was like their world, you know, those can be big losses that we need to allow them the permission to feel and to grieve.
And speaking of feeling and grieving, we want to introduce you. You hear us talking about 22-6 parenting quite a bit. We spent this first year really focused in on helping our kids experience and feel negative emotion. So we want to introduce you to that right now.
As a parent, doesn't it feel like the days feel so long, but somehow the years are just flying by so fast? And I wonder, am I missing it? I want to instill in my kids confidence and work ethic. I want them to love God and love others, to have great friendships. But in my daily life, in the midst of schedules and grocery trips and playdates and soccer practice and laundry and work, am I missing it?
That's why we created 22-6 Parenting, to be intentional, to save ourselves time and throw guilt out the window, to invest in our kids the biblical values we want to stick for a lifetime without adding anything extra to our already busy day.
22-6 has three main features. The first is community. 22-6 is a shame-free community of parents encouraging one another in our most important role, that of mom and dad. Each month, we go live for a Facebook Q&A with the community, and it's amazing.
Secondly is content. 22-6 provides the tools you need to talk about God to your kids. Based on Deuteronomy 6, each month's content includes morning prayers, dinner time stories, drive time games, and bedtime questions.
And then there's the coaching. Each month you'll receive a coaching video on that month's mile marker or topic with practical application for how to foster character development and spiritual formation in your kids.
Learn more today at 226parenting.com. That's 226parenting.com.
Okay, so picking back up, teaching our kids to be human. We talked about number one, getting outside. Two, working with our hands. Three, teaching them how to feel. What's four?
Number four is teaching them how to relate. Mm. And I think this really goes down to teaching them how to relate on so many levels, but it really comes down to putting away the screen. Again, it feels like we harp so much on screens, but putting away the screens is important, because just the other night, for our family, for instance, and our kids are getting ready to turn 3 and 5, so they're fairly young, but it'd be easy for us on a Friday evening to put, you know, a Daniel Tiger on, or quote unquote have a movie night or that kind of thing. And instead we pulled out a game that I brought back from my family's house. When my dad passed away, I found some old games and I brought a game back, and we just played this game together as a family.
It was fun.
And it was fun.
What was it called? Spinner?
Spinner.
It's like dominoes. Yeah. Is it like a really old game? I mean, it looks really old, but
no, it's actually not that old.
Really?
But it's a great game.
It was a great game. No, I totally, and our kids actually figured out how to play.
Yeah, they liked it.
I know.
Yeah, and so I love that they take spinner literally and they're spinning the dominoes.
Well, yeah, that was awesome. Funny. Anyway.
And so, but the power of helping them learn how to relate well, you have to do relationships in order to relate. You have to put your kids in positions and situations where they learn to relate well. So we're even dealing with right now, just to be very transparent, issues with our oldest, who's pretty stinking strong-willed, to say it mildly, is he's gotten back into this thing of if we ask him to brush his teeth or we ask him to do something, he'll just look at us and go, no, or something to that nature.
Which, honestly, is, I don't know where it's come from. It's been in like the last week.
It's been pretty recent. And so we've had to clamp down pretty strongly on it. And so last night, I'm laying in bed with him, and I have these two teddy bears that I've been using as kind of like a third person, third and fourth person in the room. And so I bounce them on up, and I'm talking to him through the teddy bears. And usually it's fun loving and it's laughing and that type of thing. But I used the teddy bears last night as a teaching moment. And the teaching moment was, hey, we heard today that you weren't very respectful to your mom and dad. And he speaks to them as if he's speaking to them. He's not speaking to me. He's speaking to them.
Like, he literally acts like we're not in the room. It's the funniest, weirdest thing. And but it totally works.
And so I used these teddy bears last night to teach him to say yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, to anybody in authority. So when mom or dad tell you to do something, rather than saying no, you say yes, ma'am, and yes, sir. And that we're, you know, that's respectful behavior with teachers. It's respectful behavior with grandma and grandpa, with men and women who are in authority, to say yes, ma'am, and yes, sir. And he does a pretty good job of it up until, I don't know where it's gotten out of control recently, but maybe we've been lax in our ability to do it.
Maybe it was camping.
So we're blaming it on camping.
But I didn't know you did that. So do you think it worked?
We'll see. I mean, okay. So I'm laying with him a little bit afterwards last night after we prayed, and he rolled over and he gave me a hug around the neck and he just said, Daddy, I love you. Mm. So I could tell it connect. Like, yeah. He felt remorse, yeah. Which was really cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what today looks like, but you know, I just think this ability to teach our kids to relate, but to do that though, mm-hmm. requires that we take the time to get into their world.
Yeah.
And we as parents need to be human. We need to get into our own humanity and we need to show them how to relate to other people. We need to show them, model for them how to relate to one another, our spouses. You know, I say this a lot. One study showed that the third most effective parenting strategy to get the outcomes we're looking for in our kids is how we treat our spouse, how we treat the other parent.
That's still so crazy to me.
Our kids are watching.
Yeah.
How we relate.
And I think also putting them in circumstances where they have opportunities to relate. You know, I mean, when they're young, like intentionally putting them around other adults that are not you.
Yeah. Kids their age,
kids older, kids that are younger, and not, you know, throwing them in that all the time, but just to being aware of just providing those opportunities
for them. And balancing the exploration protection part of that.
Right.
So, you know, we went to a friend's house over the weekend. They have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old. And, you know, we have our 4 and our 2-year-old and there, so there's an older kid, but we're all there, we're watching and they're playing and it was a controlled environment, but they were on their own playing, you know, we were somewhat watching them, but you know, they were having their own interactions,
which is great. And I think our tendency is to be like, did you just hit that boy? Like, yeah. You know, and jumping in and like disciplining and make sure you say, you know, come over here and you say you're sorry, you know, yeah. But giving, I think it was great because I think, you know.
Well, we were with friends who also think the same way we do, that
right.
let them work it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Let our kids work it out together.
And they did.
Yeah.
It's like you've modeled it enough times. You don't have to say, what do you say? What do you say? Yeah. What do you say?
Well, and then when I took the kids in bed last night, they were telling me, Kennedy went, she was so dead tired, but Landon did. He told me about interactions that they had. Well, he pushed me and so we talked about it and we talked a little bit about that. So,
but I think, and the more we helicopter, and I know you talk about this in Safe House, but the more we helicopter parent them, I mean, all it's really doing is instilling them the belief that they cannot do it themselves. Hmm. So the more we allow them to be in relationships and navigate them on their own, I mean, again, with enough support from us, we're not just like, best of luck kids with the neighbor, you know, the neighborhood tribe of children and hope you don't come home beat up. It's not like that, but it's a sense of you can do this. Mm-hmm. I believe in you. When you need me, I'm here. But showing them that you believe that they can do relationships well.
Yeah, that's right. And then number five, this leads us into number five, and that's teaching them to be empathetic.
Yeah.
Teaching them to love others and to step into other people's worlds.
And empathy is, I think, one of those things that they're finding in the research is a character trait that's actually going down in society because of screens and really just
self-centeredness.
Self-obsessed lives is, I think, what I was going to say. But yeah, self-centeredness, that we're so focused on ourselves and what we've got going on and what we're doing and posting all the things about what we're doing in our lives and our highlight reel, that we're not empathetic to those around us. Or, I mean, those people that we don't see, say those suffering, you know, a world away or what feels like a world away. But...
And we, at Lifeway Christian Resources, we just do a Christmas in July giveaway for toys. And we do it in July because December's quite hectic. And so that was last month. And so, but we worked with our kids to go through some of their toys to say, hey, there are other kids out there who do not have toys, mm-hmm. and we want to help them have toys. So we're going to give toys away to other kids. And here's what that looks like. Doing very practical things like that to help our kids begin to understand and step outside of themselves that, they really don't have it that bad. That the toys that they, you know, that there's other people that need to be served and loved. And we need to model that. Again, it always goes back to modeling, but we need to model that. But finding practical ways, even with the school year beginning, to help your kids bring joy to other people, to be empathetic to other people. Mm-hmm. Were you going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, I mean, it starts, I think, within the home, right? Showing empathy to one another and to one another's feelings. That's something that they see mom doing with dad and dad with mom and us with them and them with like if they're siblings with one another. I think it's like the petri dish for, you know, everything good that we can start growing at home. But that they see that we, you know, how do you think that made her feel? You know, those are questions we ask all the time. But that, I mean, it's just the basics, the very basics of empathy. But where you're feeling what someone else, you're stepping into the shoes of another person to feel what it might feel like for them and making them just aware of that.
To your point, and thinking about as we send our kids back to school, there was a Harvard study published a few years ago that showed that nearly 80% of kids stated that the primary message they receive from their parents is that personal achievement and happiness matters more than the care and concern for other people. In fact, kids in the study were also 3 times more likely to agree to this statement. My parents are prouder if I get good grades in my classes than if I'm a caring class member in my school.
Wow. Like it gives me like shivers.
So I think, you know, it's easy for us as parents to send the message that outward success matters more than inward character, more than loving and concerned of people. I have a very dear friend whose daughter was bringing home, she was just frustrated and sad at math homework, and she was doing math homework. And he sat down with her, and this really combines this whole idea of working with our hands or finding our kids' passions, getting into their world. But he sat down with her, and he's like, what's going on? And she just said, I hate math. I'm just frustrated. And he said he saw a visible difference in her mood and attitude because she's normally a joyful, jolly, jolly, right? Like she's funny. She's great. And she's got a great sense of humor. And he looked at her and he said, listen, he said, I want you, this is not who you are. Hmm. Who you are is you bring joy to other people. You make people laugh. And he said, so what I'm going to ask you over every single day from here on out is I'm not going to ask you when you come home from school, I'm not going to ask you, you know, how you did in math that day. I'm going to ask you, who did you bring joy to today and how did you do it? Mm-hmm. Who did you make laugh today and how did you do it? Because he said, that's who my daughter is. He said, I would rather her get C's in math but be living out of her strengths than get straight A's and be depressed. And frustrated.
It. Yeah.
And I thought, man, this is empathy. If we can teach our kids to, you know, ask them every day, who'd you make laugh or who did you bring joy to or, you know, who did you serve today? These are questions to be helping to be asking our kids to help them learn what it is to step into the world of another.
Well, and just like you're saying, inward character matters more. It trumps everything.
That's human.
It's human.
Yeah. And these achievement tests, there's nothing human about achievement tests. Mm. Nothing human about them. I think they're of the enemy. I think they're like, Satan, get behind me, you achievement test you.
Well, and I
just never did well on achievement tests. So.
I'm picking that up really well. That was a good test taker, but that doesn't really get you that far in life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point, is that success in whatever measure that looks like for you, of these outward things. I mean, if it's sports, if it's music, if it's school, if it's degrees, if accomplishments, they're good. They're all great. But in the end, what are people going to say about us on our last days?
And that's to wrap that up. I think it's so important to think about that as it relates to how we're teaching our kids to connect to Jesus.
Yeah. 'Cause I know that's what I want them to say about me. And I know that's what I want people to say about my kids.
Because at the end of life, all that really matters is who you loved and who loved you. And so I would really say for each of us to think about first ourselves, how are we engaging Christ in a way that helps us get in touch with our emotions and it helps us get in touch with our humanity, our ability to relate and serve others. Because when we do that, there's a trickle-down effect into our kids. It's an honor having you listen to us today. We'll see you next week.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com and come find us on Facebook or Instagram at Dr. Josh and Christy.
And be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the In This Together podcast. We'd love if you wrote a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, or questions you'd love for us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor being in this together.
We'll see you next week.